And good morning, good morning, good morning. It is a Tuesday, Monday. Whoa, rushed it a little bit. Monday morning, July the 9th, 2018. 14 minutes past 11 o'clock, and we have an extended edition of the Now program today here on WWGH Radio, getting the jump here an hour early. We will be on through 2 o'clock this afternoon, so you won't want to miss that. Now, I do want to get a quick programming note here. Legendary author and coach Satch Sullinger will restart his weekly program here on the station tomorrow morning, live in studio, taking your phone calls starting at 10:10 a.m., until 12 noon tomorrow, Satch Sullinger and his guest. Well, let me just say this. Tomorrow will be Thunderbolt Patterson Day here at WWGH Radio, because Satch Sullinger's guest tomorrow for the first 2 hours is Thunderbolt Patterson. My guest tomorrow from 12 to 2 is Thunderbolt Patterson. Linda's guest from 4 to 5 tomorrow is Thunderbolt, and then Pastor Steve Whitaker's guest tomorrow from 5 to 6 is Thunderbolt. So tomorrow's Thunderbolt Day. But just to give you a little taste, as they say, we've got 3 hours with Thunderbolt today, live in studio, as well as Terry Tackett. Terry Tackett, Thunderbolt Patterson, so glad to be here for the next 3 hours.
Heaven, hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Good to see you, Thunderbolt, as has been all weekend. Terry, we've spent a few days now with Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt came in last Wednesday morning. A lot of time at the fair, a lot of time over the weekend working on some projects, but really this is our first time in the studio live over the airwaves in people's cars as they're driving. So now that you've got, you didn't get to meet Thunderbolt the first time he was in town a couple years ago. So now meeting this man, what's the take?
I just want to say, first of all, I just want to tell him it was a pleasure. It's been a pleasure, you know, meeting him and working with him. And he's a wonderful, wonderful man. I have, you know, I can't say enough nice things about him. You know, he's been so accommodating. On
look out now. I guess some things going on.
Like I say, you know,
I'm getting no hot water.
Like I say, I just it's been my, you know, it's been a pleasure. An honor and a pleasure. Yep.
Well, and as we go on, we're going to get to know each other a whole lot better. And by the way, if you're out there in the listening audience, we are back in the studio. We are out of the fair, which, by the way, I like the fair, I like the people, but could not have been worse weather. That was the most
hot,
horrific,
miserable.
I never missed the air conditioning of this studio just to walk in and sit down. And I just want to let the audience in on a little bit of how it works. You know, when you do remote broadcasts like that, you have a tub that weighs about 50 pounds that you have to carry from the car to the fairgrounds every day. And there's just no way around that. You know, that's not the fairgrounds' fault or anybody else's. But when it's 96 degrees last Wednesday and the humidity is 90%, oh, I about dropped a couple days there at the fair. It was fun being at the fair. I enjoyed meeting everybody who we met. But I'm glad to be back here this weekend. Thunderbolt spent a few days over there. Thunderbolt, enlighten them on that heat.
Hey, man, I mean, it's getting close to me. I when you get old, you can't take much as you used to. I came from Georgia. It was hotter up here than it was in Georgia. So, but thank God we got through it.
Now, that should tell something to the listening audience. Atlanta, Georgia, which the nickname is Hotlanta.
Yeah.
It was hotter here. That, Terry, that was, by all accounts, my understanding, record-breaking heat on the 4th of July.
The way I understand it from all the reports I've seen is that we never had a higher heat index, we never had a higher temperature, you know, than that week. So,
you know what though? Spite of it all, for me, I want you fellas to know something. In spite of the whole thing, the heat or whatever, a little uncomfortable at all, whatever. But in spite of it all, this is the best and the most meaningful is 4th of July that I can ever remember.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Not only that, but coming here on the 4th, You know, you got the opportunity to talk to my good friend, Mr. Tyson, that I wouldn't have been here if it hadn't been for him, because I missed my plane. And when I got to the airport, I didn't have no money. And if it wasn't for him, I couldn't have got here. So that's a long time friend of mine. But thank God we made it.
And we did. And we're here. Now, I thought what we would do in this first hour today is spend a little time just chatting about big time wrestling, because there are some fans listening out there today who for many years packed that Coliseum that we were in during the fair as the Sheik battled Bobo Brazil, as the Sheik battled Thunderbolt Patterson. Ox Baker was in there, Dominic DiNucci, Terry's very...
Would that have been like Flying Fred Curry?
Fred Curry, and I always forget it.
Was it Wild Bull Curry?
No. The big... it was Furpo.
Pampiro?
Pampiro Furpo.
Pampiro Furpo.
Anybody who saw Pampiro forget.
Vashon.
Vashon. The Butcher and...
Abdullah the Butcher?
I mean the Paul the Butcher Vashon and Mad Dog.
Abdullah was up there for a period.
Abdullah the Butcher.
And also you had...
Mark Lewin.
Maniac.
Well, let's not forget the announcer, Lord Alton Latham, who used to come around.
Yeah.
So Thunderbolt spent a period up there. So let's start with the guy who was the show in those days.
The Sheik.
Eddie Forehead. I mean, not only was Eddie Forehead a very, very good performer in the wrestling business, but a lot of people might not know that during my struggle, Eddie Forehead and his wife Joyce, they came to work for me in the Army in Atlanta.
Oh.
And both of them was kicked out of the National Wrestling Alliance because they worked for me.
So now, is that the one you said they sat on the board of directors and they were kicked off the board of directors?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of the National Wrestling Alliance.
Wow.
That was in St. Louis, Missouri. And I started in Kansas City, and I never got the opportunity to work in St. Louis. Mm. So
you think that close? I mean, that they would just, you know.
Well, everybody else wins. So,
okay.
I mean, all they can do is just tell you nothing or tell you a lie. So.
In those days, the Sheik really, what was considered his territory when I looked at the map, was really just Michigan and Ohio. Now, he did go into Indiana every so often, just a touch. He did go into Pennsylvania, a touch, West Virginia, Kentucky.
Well, Sheik went everywhere.
Right.
But his territory
was just,
his territory was the Michigan and Ohio.
Michigan and Ohio.
And occasionally, I mean, he worked also Toronto, you know, Canada. But his area was Michigan and Ohio.
And the point I wanted to make about that is you have to understand the Sheik started in the late 50s and ran that territory through the early 80s.
Yes.
And now remember, this is the man, and he did that for 3 decades and drew money every time he did it. What was it about the Sheik that even if you saw him last month, you wanted to see him next month?
Charisma. I mean, charisma and know what he's doing. And then also, you know, you have all the names of the guys that you've been speaking of was around him. You know, I mean, it wasn't nothing like this here today. You go out there, you can see him. I mean, everything is scripted. I mean, boom, 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 boom. I mean, everything, you know what I mean? It's not wrestling anymore. It's way, way beyond the level of entertainment.
When you went up there, those guys like Furpo and I'm trying to think of another one, Bobo.
George Steele.
Who really...
What was the one guy? Was there a Baron somebody?
Baron Vorosky.
Baron Von Raschke.
But Furpo and Bobo almost had really in exclusivity with the Sheik. I mean, they would work New York, they'd worked in the South, but boy, they had really bonded.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's how most areas has been over the years. Have certain individuals that, when they get there and catch on, they stay. You know, but I was always told, if you buy a house, you better have some wheels on it where it can move. So I understand what they're meaning now, of that now.
As far as being the boss, aside from the performer, what kind of boss was Sheik?
Sheik was a friend. Sheik was Eddie Forehead. Eddie Forehead. I mean, he knew his business, but he was Eddie Forehead, first of all.
Now, was he a guy who, if you had dissonance, which all people do at some point, if you had dissonance with a payoff, if you had dissonance...
Hey, man, well, look at this. That's in the business. But for me now, everywhere I went,
was he one of the ones you could talk to?
Yeah.
And say,
yeah.
I don't agree with that. A little touch. Now, because he was big, and I know we've talked that you didn't know him that well, but why do you think Bobo Brazil in this area was so popular?
Because they let him stay here. And just like we said a moment ago, he didn't have to go nowhere. And Bobo was a very good card. A giant of a man, could move. And Sheik accepted. You know, I hate to get into this color thing.
Well, no, that's
important.
Understand
what I'm
it's
saying
important.
Because it goes all on in every area. They use people, you know, and if you don't get along or don't go along, then you got to go.
When you look at those days, I'm going to go back to Sheik just for one thing and then pick back up Bobo. In ring, how would you rate the Sheik?
How could you? You can't rate him. Because you don't know what the heck he going to do.
That's what. Well, all these stories about, if you were in there with him, which you were, did he do things? I mean, he was the guy who pulled out.
Ain't no telling. Ain't no telling. But thank God he never did get the chance to burn me.
Yeah.
But I was very fortunate in that way. But it's no telling in a match what the Sheik would or wouldn't do to you.
Terry, you got a question off the Sheik?
I was just, from the standpoint of the Sheik, I mean, had obviously he wrestled a lot of people. Had you really ever seen anybody quite like him, like his style or anything?
No, him and Abdullah.
Yeah,
him and Abdullah is the only two.
Okay. They were kind of the innovators of style of... Okay. All
right. When it came to the matches that he had with Abdullah, which are legend, why did those two, who were both by the crowd hated, have such a... could draw them in?
Well, I mean, that's what... Don't you want to see the bad stuff together? You know what I mean? Just like if they were good, don't you want to see the bad stuff together? That has that talent, that with a match with Abdullah and the Sheik, it might go all over that building.
Well, that's the thing. And we talked to Abdullah the other night. You want to talk about hardcore and truly bleeding, sweating, tearing, forks?
Yes.
I mean... You thought
I don't think there was anything that was off limits, you know. I mean,
so when those two went in, when you first saw, because they innovated that type of match, what did you say to yourself, being in the industry?
Well, I mean, is this something you got to deal with? And thank God I was able to deal with that pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because everybody couldn't.
Yeah.
Take them to tell you about that.
Yeah. Did you, I can't remember, I know you're friends with Abdullah. Did you have matches with Abdullah?
I had a few.
He's a big gentleman.
Yes, sir.
What was it like being in there with him?
It didn't make no difference what size they were. Didn't make no difference. Didn't make any difference who it was.
Did you have to have, different strategy with him
since he was such a
bigger? Okay.
You got to
do,
just like you when you go to that mic right there, you got to do what you do.
Okay. All right.
Abdullah... even more than the Sheik, I believe, and this is just my opinion, and the Sheik did strike fear in his fans.
Oh, yeah.
But there was something about Abdullah, the size, the head.
The raw chicken, the things that he done was, you know, yeah.
Real revolutionary for him. So
when I was younger, there were two people that scared me to death, and one of them was Abdullah, and the second one was Kamala.
Oh, you know, now, and that
scared me to
it's
death.
It's amazing now you bring up Kamala. Because Kamala, I never did meet Kamala. But I met Abdullah, you know what I mean? In these recently years,
that's the way to be.
And Kamala has both of his legs cut off, amputated
from diabetes,
from you know whatever it is.
Yeah,
and you know the stories that you hear about the different pay between him and Hulk Hogan and several different people and. He's at the top of the list of being paid, and Vince hadn't paid him.
You know, Thunderbolt, I want to come in here just to say this. Is he somebody who you have contact with?
Who?
Kamala.
I got his phone number.
Now, if we could get him on in one of the breaks.
Let me just say some things to you. With some people, you know what I mean? I'd have to let you. Some people, just like. Miss Johnson don't care to talk about some things, you know,
absolutely.
Because they hoping or what I don't know. He will complain to people, but he won't speak out like it, you know.
Well, his story is one that deserves to be told. The payoff.
We can call him and let we sure can find out.
We can give a try. But the point is, when Thunderbolt, the light bulb that went off over my head. Now, you have to understand that Kamala was a draw wrestling Hulk Hogan at the height of Hulk Hogan's Hulkamania.
Right, right.
Now, you got to understand that when we're talking about a pay differential, we're not
substantial.
We're not talking about Hulk Hogan got 100,000 and Kamala got 50,000.
No,
we're talking Kamala got in the hundreds of dollars.
No. I mean, I can one that I know of. He got 60, and Hulk got 125,000.
Think about that.
Wow.
I mean, both in the same match.
48% of what Hulk got.
Come on now.
You know what I mean? Well,
but you know, and Hulk couldn't have done it by itself.
No. And we have to understand, for the longest time, the indoor attendance, and this is a point of, and again, really, truthfully, we can't blame Hulk because he wasn't the payoff man.
He wasn't the payoff man. No, we can't.
So we got to let the audience know that.
Right. We can't blame Hulk Hogan because he was at the right place at the right time, and they ran with him. That's who they wanted to. That's how they do things.
Now,
it's not on ability or this or that. It's individuals that they want to make money.
And
it's all about the dollar.
And I have it on good authority. And you can check this if you like. The largest indoor attendance crowd for many, 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 many years was 93,000 people just 2 hours up in the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, 1987, WrestleMania 3.
That's what I heard.
Now, this is true. Now, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant was the main event. Hulk Hogan, what he made on that event, if you took Andre the Giant and everybody else on the card, even including the announcers, Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura, it didn't equal what Hulk made.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, you have to...
He got his money, boy.
He got his money.
I wish I could have got mine like that.
So we have to understand that in the...
Well, those are things that, I have to skip and stuff. That's what Eric Bischoff done. Now, you talking about... one of the lowest whale stuff. You know where that go, don't you?
I do.
He bought in individuals there in Atlanta that couldn't tie up their boots. and paid him big, big bucks. And he, do you know what he asked me one time?
Tell the audience. This is a terrible story. Terrible that he did this.
Do you know what he asked me?
Yeah, I do. But I want you to tell the audience. Called you into his office.
Called me into and asked me what could I do to help WCW? What can I do to help
Are them? You kidding me?
No, that's real. What a low down.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that was, that was, I mean, and at that time, Atlanta was the only place I could work.
You know, and there is a theme, and again, I bring it back to Kamala just for this purpose. I don't know the ins and outs of this, but when Bischoff brought in Hogan in WCW, and they were rolling a little better than they had been, ratings-wise, for Turner, Bischoff brought back Kamala. But I do know Kamala had a very short stay, only about 3-4 months, again, because Bischoff would not pay Kamala right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I don't know. But, you know, he did the same thing, and I don't know what you know much about this guy, Thunderbolt, but he did the same thing with Wayne Ferris, the Honky Tonk Man. Brought him in for a minute.
Well, I didn't know.
Yeah, so he did that.
I've heard that story.
Did that with several guys, and I don't know what his there were just certain guys he liked and certain guys.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, let's look at this thing real, man. I mean, let's look at it and look at it real deeply. I mean, you know, there's some guys that he didn't get along with that was not friends to his friends or whatever. But the basic of the thing, you know, and I hate to talk about the black thing, man, but it's there.
It certainly is. You know,
it's real.
We ain't the only two.
Right. Well, Bobo, out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, the truth is, I mean, he certainly, for as well as he did, Madison Square Garden several times, he wasn't, you know, certainly not a millionaire.
Absolutely.
Certainly
well,
not.
Well, Bobo, I mean, you know, you can go along with anything and you can end up with something.
Somebody,
but if you don't go along with nothing, you ain't going to end up with nothing.
There's a gentleman who we have never really discussed, and this is a name that might not ring a bell with the people listening, but he's somebody who Thunderbolt knew, and he deserves to be discussed. I'm going to say the name, and I'm going to tell you who he was, audience, and then we'll get into why he's an interesting person. His name's Jim Barnett. Now, Jim Barnett was not a wrestler. Jim Barnett was, people refer to him as the Truman Capote of the wrestling business. He was a promoter, but he was a very eccentric man, from what I hear. Now,
yes.
The only person who I know currently in the studio who's met him, he was down in Atlanta, is Thunderbolt. Now, tell me about Jim Barnett.
Well, I met Jim in Australia before I... it's amazing, man. It is amazing because when I got to Texas, then I come to Florida and Austin and Detroit, this all ties in it, and this is my life here. Barnett was first class suits. We flew everywhere we went. Paid fairly decent. I mean, you agree, whatever, you know, it's all right. But Barnett, excuse me, owned it.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Thunderbolt Patterson's going to be with us 3 hours today. We're chatting about Atlanta promoter Jim Barnett, who we're going to get into.
One of the men. I mean, everybody wanted him to come to the States because he was first class and paid. And just so happened he came and bought into Atlanta. But years and years ago, he had Indiana. I think he sold Detroit to the Sheik, And he was a promoter for a long time, you know, and just only thing that I had, only problem I had with Barnett, he didn't let me bring my lady over to Australia just like he let everybody else.
Thunderbolt was on a tour in Australia wrestling.
Twice.
And what Jim Barnett used to do is on the last night, he would let the wrestlers...
Last week.
Would let wrestlers under his promotion bring their wives, girlfriends, yes, whatever, and on, he wouldn't let Thunderbolt. Did you ever ask Barnett why he did that?
No.
Here's what I want to get into Barnett, because it's interesting because Barnett did not appear on camera. There is no footage of Jim Barnett, but everybody's got a Barnett story. He kept a penthouse.
My boy.
There it is. This is how Jim Barnett talked. Go ahead, Thunderbolt.
Oh, my boy. Thunderbolt, my boy. Everything all right. But one thing about Jim, he always let them. What a person do, that's their business. But one thing, he always let Ole do what he wanted to do with me, because I was money.
Want to make this point, and Jim Barnett's gone, by the way. He's no longer with us. But I'm just going to ask you, this is an opinion, because I don't really know the answer on this. Two questions that I think are both of opinion. And it doesn't mean anything, because like I say, we're in the 2000s. Was Jim Barnett homosexual?
Well, man, I can't tell you that one now, because you never, you know, you see, do I think?
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at him and tell you.
There you go. So, but that's okay. Yeah. Let him do what he wants to do.
Right.
But the question is, do you think that's why he never appeared on camera? Was fear?
I don't know. I couldn't answer that one.
But he never. Nobody ever saw him.
Not much that I know of.
Did you ever get called to the?
Oh no, the penthouse.
Yeah.
Oh no, no, no.
No. I want to make clear for you.
Yeah, I understand.
It wasn't a homosexual thing to get called to the penthouse.
No. But wait a minute. Hold on.
Well, maybe it was. I don't know.
I don't know now.
Yeah.
You know, rumors and things. I don't know.
Well,
and it wasn't none of my business. But I never had the opportunity to even go there.
And let me say this. It was just Barnett. For some reason, was he a reclusive guy? Did he like to be out in the offices? Did he like to be at the events?
Well, I mean, he was, a big shot. I mean, you know, Rolls Royce, come in and go out. You know what I mean? I guess he enjoyed himself.
Do we know where he made his money, or was it in the wrestling business?
I have no idea.
But he was a true character.
That's what you tell me. And from what I know, he was that just that.
Yeah. But he was not, when you would talk to him, the few interactions you had with him over the years, how would you consider his character? Was he just a nice man? Was he easy to get along with?
Yeah, he was easy to get along with. I mean, he joked along and, always... Want to know your business, how many ladies you had, da 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 da, different stuff like that. You know.
Well, he truly goes down as one of
Jim Barnett.
You hear tons of stories about him.
Well, you hear about Jim Barnett quite a bit, and truly, Jim Barnett in the history books will be one of those guys that we all have a memory of. You've heard the Jim Barnett stories.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
My boy. That's what we always hear about Jim Barnett.
How you doing today, my boy?
My boy.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to kind of touch on here, we touched on it a little yesterday, and I'm not going to ask you, we were doing word association yesterday and some things we were doing here off air, and I said the name Ric Flair. Now, I don't want you to tell me about Ric Flair, but tell me why it's not a good feeling for you to talk about Ric Flair.
Ric Flair, just like a couple others, are just totally caught up in themselves. You know what I mean? And, you know, I have the feeling that a few guys kept me out of a few spots You know, I mean, because they didn't want to work with me. You know, I mean, they just didn't want to work with me because I don't play games, and I wouldn't let them play with me.
Another name that is high on a lot of people's list, just of people they know, for good or bad, in the promoting business, was Bill Watts.
A piece.
Yeah.
A piece of...
Yeah.
A piece of doo-doo.
What was it about Bill Watts that made him that?
To pretend to be your friend, and then... man, I got $1,000sold out the Superdome.
In New Orleans.
In New Orleans.
We're talking like 25, 26,000 people, you know.
And you understand what I'm saying? And also, got, you know, Tony Ellis can verify this. Mm-hmm. Bill Watts, Dusty Rhodes, Teddy Long, and Tony Atlas, Black History Month. You know, and all they talked about was how hard to get along I was with. And also, Teddy Long says that Ole said in front of me that we only want one in at one time. And Ole wouldn't do something like that. Ole's not that. Ole might call you one if he wanted to call you one, but he wouldn't say that in front of me. You see what you understand what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. Ole Anderson.
Bar none.
Yeah.
Bar none is one of the best bookers that's ever been in wrestling.
What made him a good booker?
Because he recognized and appreciated talent. If it was a piece of that, he would call it that.
That's all you have
that's
to do.
That's the reason. At one time, Vince told Ole, said, well, we drawing this or whatever. But look at the numbers of New York and Atlanta. We sold out every week. For years. You understand what I'm saying?
In that era, we had Jim Barnett down in Atlanta. We had Vince McMahon Sr. up in New York. We had the Sheik here in the Detroit, Ohio area.
Vern Gagne.
Vern Gagne. Did you ever have any interaction with Vern Gagne?
When I first started wrestling, that's where I would go up and I had my training. That's where I met Furpo and all of them. But Vern never did use me. Vern used Ernie, Sailor Thomas, but they didn't want to. I never got a chance to. I would blow that territory upside down.
And it's a shame.
They didn't let me get in a lot of Chicago. They didn't let me in, they didn't let me in places.
Bruiser had a territory. Were you ever?
I didn't know Bruce at all.
Didn't know Bruce. I know somebody you did know, and not on a high note, was Eddie Graham.
That would have been what, the Florida territory?
Down in Florida.
You're tying into my story now. I was in Fort Worth for Fritz. Fort Worth is one of the most touching parts of my career. I have a daughter there, my baby girl. That was a period of my life when I found peace and happiness and was going through the transition of change of what's real and what's right. And I had a little piece of land up there. I had a neighborhood bar in Fort Worth. Terry Funk used to come every time Fort Worth to Dallas run. He'd come up and we shoot a little poop up. But he asked me to go to Florida for Eddie Graham, and I had. It's a few places that I didn't ever go. That was Florida. Over there in Tennessee for Nick Gulas, and I never went them on long ass trip down there and for Bill Watts over in there. And he told me, said, "Bo, go on down and try to help him out a little bit and come back. I'll give you a little opportunity to get in a few little businesses things with me." So I went. And, man, we started busting out. That's the ear of had to build bigger buildings, going into the larger arenas and tearing out walls. But Eddie Graham was a bad paymaster, and I got in a riot in San Juan and had a compound fracture. Eddie Graham was across the aisle, never crossed the aisle. Hadn't been from the Missouri Mall, I never would have made it back in. Stayed with me all the way.
You know, Eddie Graham, I think everybody, hearsay, but Eddie Graham was the promoter in Florida, as we say, and he committed suicide.
I hear a lot of stories on that.
What's that? What's the story you've heard?
Well, I mean, you just hear stories. I mean, I don't like to spread rumors, but, you know, his boy done the same thing.
He did. And his grandson.
What?
His grandson as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, maybe that's something that we shouldn't even touch. But it happened. And all the money he stole and made and, you know.
While you're on that same thing, it just occurred to me that I know Thunderbolt worked a lot for Fritz. Well, he's kind of had that same tragedy in his
Eric
family.
Fritz tragedy.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, what kind of guy was he to work for?
When you're talking about Fritz, you're another whole ball game.
Now we're talking about Fritz von Erich, Texas promoter.
Fritz von Erich took over from. I can't think of the guy's name. That he was in Houston.
Was that Paul Bosch?
No. Paul Bosch ran Houston.
Okay.
But Morris Siegel was that? That might be right.
Yeah.
But Morris Siegel, I think it was. I might be wrong on that.
Yeah.
But it was a guy that had, and he passed away.
What territory of Thunderbolt did Grizzly Smith have? Was he?
Well, Grizzly was a booker for.
He was just a booker. Okay.
Several other little places.
Okay.
So back to the Von Erich tragedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, just to let people know, Fritz Von Erich was also a wrestler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then he became a promoter in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the course of his promoting shows in Texas, he had five boys.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them were dead before Fritz. What did you make of the curse?
That's the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. You know, I have no idea. Fritz was a stand-up guy. And far as I told you, he kicked me one time. Boy, left his boots right there. But I really couldn't even start to talk about that. You know, that's deeper than.
What's it was a horrible tragedy.
Yeah.
Some were shotgun wounds. Some were accidental. Yeah. Some were
ODs.
Medical.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just an entire mess. And, but boy, at one time, they were doing good.
Yeah, they always ran a sportatorium, I remember.
And oh, yeah.
Were you ever in a sportatorium?
Oh, yeah.
Was it as nasty a place as
I heard the concession stand story a lot.
Been that long time. Yeah, buddy.
The big rats and all that stuff. But
yeah, but it was a place for wrestling, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, sir.
A tin building. Down there, but it was a building.
What was the capacity on that? Was it like,
I don't know,
10,000?
I don't know what the hell,
it seems like they sold out a lot, though.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, sell out at Johnny Valentine. And boy, what a performer that was, man. Wahoo McDaniel.
Wow.
Whew. Lothario, Jose Lothario.
Oh.
Man, these boys, hey, man, I'm talking about I'm talking about wrestlers, boy.
Yeah. Wow.
Real, real great guys. Mm-hmm. Good guys.
Mm-hmm. Good workers and everything, too.
Good workers, but they were decent people.
Yeah.
Wasn't that...
Thunderbolt, when you were in Atlanta, once Ted Turner took over the operation, when you went back in the early 90s, Jim Herd was there. Now, Jim Herd is still living, from what I understand. Now, he became the booker.
The Pizza Hut man. He ran. Yeah,
he was the pizza man.
That's how they do. I mean, what do a pizza man know about some
restaurants? tell me about Jim Herd.
Well, I mean, at that time, when they started making all them changes, you know, they pretty well got in their mind. They didn't want to have nothing to do with me and Ole. Cause Ole would tell them how he felt, and I would show them how I felt, you know? So Jim Herd was just something that was passing through that when that J.J. Dillon and all them started coming there, and then none of them know what they was doing. Running the office, the wrestling bar. People that they put in charge of different things had no idea, no clue about wrestling, but they were telling people what to do.
Thunderball, I have a question real quick just on Jim. Is he the one that created Eric Bischoff? I mean, you know, did Jim Herd kind of give Bischoff the power that he had? Well, is that where?
I guess Barnett and him.
Okay. I didn't know if it went back to there. Okay.
Bischoff was an announcer in Minneapolis,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
And it was them.
Seems like he rose to power. Well, over,
hey, don't them snakes get in there? That's how it go. Especially in this wrestling business.
Jim Herd, maybe he was just delivering a pizza and then he went on through.
He wasn't there that long.
Yeah. No, he didn't have a...
Heard some interesting stories about that
guy.
Well,
people who worked with him didn't like him.
Right.
I don't know anybody who really had a nice thing to say about Jim Herd. Now, it's interesting because the headquarters of the NWA in Thunderbolt's day were in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, that was the territory of Sam Muchnick.
Muchnick.
Yeah. Now, Terry, St. Louis, wrestling at the Chase, mm-hmm. famous for all those certain things. Now, you would think somebody of Thunderbolt's credentials
Absolutely.
In that day
right.
would have some dealings and doings in the St. Louis area.
Well, especially, I mean, being familiar with Kansas City, I mean, you would think it'd be a no-brainer, you know what I mean? A no-brainer if he's tearing the house down in Kansas City, I mean.
Yeah, you would think that we would be able to put something together
right.
in St. Louis,
exactly.
Missouri.
You know, I mean, I don't know what...
But, that
unfortunately
never was
happened.
To be.
No, it took all of that to make this, and only they can answer those questions.
And I guess we're about 3 minutes, and we're going to take a break for 15, and we'll come back with more Thunderbolt Patterson. But what when we talk about the wrestling business, when you look back, if you had to pick a favorite territory, a favorite promoter.
Amarillo, Texas.
And the Funks.
And the Funks.
And the Funks. We haven't talked. Why were the Funks so good?
Funk was about the toughest old man that I've ever ran across.
Dory Funk.
Just hard, cold, tough old man. But he was a fair individual. One night, they had a get-together because everything, we were selling out everything. Everything was selling out. And when they start selling out, and a lot of the guys started complaining. See, when I get come on the scene, somebody's going to lose their job or get moved down or something. And Funk told him, say, anybody that don't like what Thunderbolt and myself is doing now, pack your bag and leave. I've never had a promoter to stand up for me, just like when we went to Abilene.
Tell that, we have a minute left, tell that story.
Well, it's Cher, killed his wife, tied himself up, drew the picture, looked just like me. the long man Sladen said, "Hey, don't bring him down. Don't send him down here this week. They got a warrant out for his arrest." He said, "What? No, I ain't gonna send him. I'm gonna bring him down." And Funk and I went down.
Now this was Dory. Dory Senior. Dory Senior. Okay.
What if the killer had not been found, which was the sheriff himself?
It was the sheriff.
Yeah, had killed his wife.
Uh huh.
What was Dory?
I had no idea.
That could have got ugly.
I had no idea, but he was with me.
He was with you.
Yeah.
Were you? I mean, that's scary. That's scary.
Well, hey! They can kill you, but they couldn't eat me.
There you go. We're going to take a 15-minute break, come back with Thunderbolt Patterson, Terry Tackett, and two more hours today. Don't touch that dial.
The legendary First Lady of Broadcasting in Marion, Madge Cooper.
If you have a new announcer and he's not from this area, you make sure that before he went on the air, the first, it is not us.
And got back into radio, and now I'm doing